Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome into the Couch Potato Sports Show. It's me, Sonny Clark, the hardest working man in sports radio, with your coverage of indoor football. And folks, with what is going on in indoor football, with all the leagues that are going on, we try to keep track of it and bring interesting stories and have an idea of what's going on in the indoor world. And there's an indoor world happening over there on the East Coast. As the East Coast is developing a couple of leagues, there's another league that took the field and is making, I guess if you want to call them, waves as far as bringing in teams and everything. The AIF, and I got online, the man that kind of keeps things under wraps, and he kind of watches over a lot of things, and when you are responsible for a whole league and some of the things that happens on the day-to-day basis as the director of operations, you got a lot of work. I got on here, Larry Clark. How you doing, Larry?
Good. How you doing this evening, Sonny?
Doing good, and I was told that don't let Larry Clark's name have any influence. My uncle is named Larry Clark, so I got to stay away from that. That having been said, we're going to jump right in. You have a couple of announcements. We might as well jump into that as far as some new teams that are popping in to the AIF. Let's go over a little bit about that, a couple of announcements in the last couple of days.
Yep. Yesterday we had two big announcements. We announced the Raleigh Torch, which will be playing, well, actually the Triangle Torch, but they'll be playing out of the Dorton Center in Raleigh, North Carolina. And we also announced Central Lakeland Jags. It's going to be the Central Florida Jags, and they'll be playing at the Lakeland Center where a previous team used to play.
That's one of the big questions. There was a previous team that was playing there. I guess the question is the ownership of that team, is it the same ownership of that team that was playing there, and they're just changing some things up and making a new team with a different name?
No, this is completely new ownership. They were affiliated as far as being front office staff, but they've separated themselves from the previous owner and have decided to branch out on their own and rebranded as the Central Florida Jags. The lady who owns it, Neva Green, actually is very big with the youth organizations in the area and runs youth leagues in the arena. So that's how that all came about, with her wanting to take over the ownership and starting that team, just because of the youth and then wanting to promote the players into the next level.
Moving back over into Philadelphia, you guys had the big announcement. I actually listened to the actual presser for that one. So you got a new team that's going into Philadelphia, and you're quite excited about some of the things that are going on as far as that team is concerned. If you listen to the presser itself, there was a lot of excitement about that team opening up over there.
Yeah, that was a very big deal. ESPN covered it last night. We had a few news stations that covered it as well. Joseph Krause, the owner of the team, he used to be director of marketing for the Soul, so he's very, very schooled on how indoor football works, and he's got a great business plan, and I think that's going to be one of our most successful teams going into this season.
A lot of changes that are happening with your league as well, not only just with a lot of new teams that are going up, but is there a lot of changes going on as far as the league is concerned this upcoming year?
Yep, some of the changes we're making is with the new teams we're bringing in, we're vetting them. We're not doing the typical what some other leagues will do, bring in a semi-pro team, trying to upscale them into a professional team. These are all new teams with solid ownership. And so it should be a great season dealing with these teams. And they are all familiar with the indoor football world and know how the business works. So I think we'll be very solid with our ownership.
When you take a look at the AIF, you know, being what it is, you know, you've had some, you know, things that didn't go right last year and some things that did go right. But especially bringing in new teams. I guess the big question as a guy that just covers all these things, and I watch the leagues and things, my question comes to as far as, you know, the stability of the new teams. I mean, how's the due diligence go? What is all entailed when you're trying to bring in a new team into the league to try to make it stronger?
What I do is I have a very defined list of vetting process that I go through. Obviously, arena being number one, and financials of the team being number two, and like I had mentioned before, having experience in the indoor football world and staying away from some of this. What the other leagues will do is trying to up a semi-pro team because they really are converting from outdoor into indoor and just don't understand the nuances of what it takes to run an indoor team.
That's an interesting point that you make, but if you take a look at some of the things that happened last year, and you're well aware of it, some of the things that ended up happening were kind of, I guess you could say, semi-football-ish, I mean, as far as the games that happened outside compared to the inside, and how that whole thing happened. I mean, it kind of left a black eye a little bit on the league, didn't it?
It did. I believe you're referring to Savannah.
Yes.
Yes, but Savannah, what happened with them is they were an indoor team but had lost their arena lease right prior to the season. So it did put a hamper on us as far as that. And of course, that's something we want to avoid because it is indoor football. But as of 2 weeks ago, and I'm getting ready to put a press release out, they have their arena completely secured. We have dates for them, so they will be indoors this year. They did go through some growing pains, granted, for their first year, but they have learned from it, and they're going to be playing in a fantastic facility there in Savannah.
Okay, so they're going to be back next year. How does that decision come by? Do other teams get the opportunity to say, hey, wait a second, that's not happening, look what happened last year? Or is this a league decision that is made? Because I'll be honest, as a guy that watches them, and I've seen many, many things that happen with indoor football, I look at a team like the team, and that happening tells me something about management. Is there any change in management? Is there something that is different this year besides having the lease? Because if something happens to the point of the reasoning of losing the lease compared to did they not have the money or not, as an outsider, I look at that and I get questionable about the Savannah team coming back into the league.
Sure. The reason they had lost their lease is because they had to deal with because it's at a college, so you have to deal with the athletic director and things like that. And they had originally had an agreement with the lease, and then for whatever reason, the athletic department had pulled the dates from them. That was the true reason for losing the lease on the arena. It wasn't a monetary situation or anything like that. And we actually do have an executive board that meets once a month, and we do discuss what teams to bring in and things like that. So it's not a John Morris or a Larry Clark total decision. We go out, we'll recruit the teams, and we present the items to the executive board, and the executive board will give their input, and we'll go from there on what their recommendation is, yes or no. And a lot of that has to do with travel. The teams are always concerned about travel and things like that, how teams are lining up in their region. So there is a lot of thought process that does go into it.
Well, I was looking at that, and you're right. I guess if you want to call them, you know, using an old wrestling term, you know, the territories that you got going on, whether it be up in the east, northeast, and moving into the Midwest and Chicago with Cleveland and all, you know, in Michigan and stuff, you know, like that. And then you're bringing in some other teams in Michigan, you know, for expansion. So I guess when you see what happened last year, I guess the question I have, is it any surprise that people who are on the outside looking in are questioning, you know, the success of the AIF next year because of the, you know, growing pains that you guys went through in 2015?
Yeah, it's not surprising, you know, from somebody looking, from the outside looking in, you know, but they don't know what the inner workings are and what our vetting process is and why we place teams where we do. you know, we could be like other leagues and start placing teams cross country, but that doesn't fit within our budget. And so we're always looking to place a team within a region that helps everybody with their travel. And I think everybody will be pleasantly surprised at the end of the year with the solid ownership groups that we have brought in on how well the season will go. And then hopefully moving forward, we'll get over that stigma of what's happened last year. And, you know, in, as of this year, we are currently the longest running continuous indoor football league. So, I mean, that speaks a little bit to us as well.
When you look at what's going on as far as what has been put in place to prevent that from happening, I know you got solid ownership, and I hear what you're saying, but is there any other things that are being put into place to make sure that the AIF will not be looked upon as, you know, maybe a league that is something? Because I made a statement the other day to a lot of people is that indoor football is now becoming a sport that it's, you know, fans are having a hard time trusting it. And I think that's one of the reasons why maybe it hasn't been grabbed on and has been, you know, looked upon as something that isn't really an alternative to whether it's the NFL or the college game.
Yeah. Obviously, with some of the teams we're bringing in, the fan base is going to be there. You know, the fan base is going to be there in Lakeland because they've always drawn great. Savannah is looking to have a good, strong fan base. Philadelphia, I think he's going to do a fantastic job marketing that team and have a good fan base. We have the returning champ, York Capitals, who will just have a fantastic fan base. So we have to build on it across the board with those teams. Reading struggled a little bit, but he's got some more marketing ideas. You know, he works with me on marketing. So I think he's gotten over that first year hump as well. So you're right, Chicago has a great fan base. It's just a matter of building on that and keeping the trust of the fans and keeping the teams going in the league so you don't have a situation where we've had or even other leagues have had last year and years past is, you know, you have to bring in another team and then you have a 92-10 score and that does nobody any good in the sport.
Absolutely.
Whatsoever. It doesn't matter if you're AFL, AIF, PIFL, none of those leagues. It doesn't make sense to have games like that.
Yeah, it hurts the leagues. It hurts the credibility of the league as well. So I guess that's another question I was at. It's like we're going right in motion. What are you guys going to do to prevent that? Because that does hurt the league. It does hurt the image of the league. And more so that it really, I think, creates a situation where people may or may not travel, I mean, to see a game. As the way that it's shaping up, you're looking at everything on the East Coast over there, and that's a pretty good thing, and keeping it within traveling distance and things of that sort as well.
Yeah. Well, we do have contingency plans. We had some issues with Cleveland, and what we do, we carry a escrow fund, so if there is a catastrophic situation that would happen for whatever reason, we have the money in place that we will place a team and with the talent as best as we can so no games have to get canceled and games can, then there can be a continuation of games. And we do try to keep it out of the same city so people are familiar. So if Chicago, say, is going to play Cleveland, you know, it's a continuation if something happened with the Cleveland team. You know, it's still a continuation for Chicago as far as marketing and everything.
When you look at what's going to happen in 2016, like you said, like I said, when we were looking at growing pains and stuff, you learned a lot this year. How are you going to take that into the effect and move it into 2016? You know, we talked about rules. We talked about some different things. But is it more about, you know, keeping it regional? Because the biggest, like you said, I think you hit the nail right on the head, is that the travel is the biggest issue when it comes to a league like this.
Yeah, regional is where I'm focusing right now on all my attention. You know, ultimately, I'd like to have three divisions. I'd like to have a Southern, a Mid-Atlantic, and then a Midwest division. Five teams each, so everybody gets to play a balanced schedule, and the travel costs are way down. And we're making a couple changes this year towards our operations manual. We're going to be, you know, paying some of the teams extra money out of the league funds for playoff games and things like that, because once they get past that 10th game and they're out of home games, it's a struggle for these guys to travel, and we don't want anybody hoping they don't make the playoffs. We want everybody to play their best game, so that's why, as a league this year, that's one of the major changes we're making, is kicking in some money to help them with their travel.
And that's an interesting point, because if what people fear, I guess, if someone looking out, if there's a team that's not slated or having a chance to make the playoffs, or the season's just not going well, you know, what is in place to make sure that they stay within the league? I mean, instead of throwing in the towel that we've seen in other leagues, and unfortunately you have the same situation in your league, how are you going to prevent them from throwing the towel in, and do you guys have, you know, legal measures in place to be able to take care of that, to make sure that doesn't happen, as far as that's concerned?
Yes, we have made some changes, again, to the operations manual. It's been approved by the executive committee. We have put in some monetary damage clauses into it. So, you know, obviously that can't prevent every situation, but it would give us some legal ground to stand on. And we'll give the team, would put them in bad standing, obviously. And if they're on a multi-year contract, that really hurts them in the long run. So, between the monetary provisions we have, and then some of the other legal items that we have that I really can't speak to, but we're doing everything possible to make sure that we don't have that throw in the towel mentality anymore. And if a team's in trouble monetarily, we have an escrow fund that we're setting up specifically for these situations, so we do not have the situations of teams doing that. Because we look around at other leagues, we see what other leagues are doing. Like you said, everybody's got a bit of a struggle right now because of the fan base and how fluid teams are moving through leagues, and that's not what we want to be. I want to get 15 teams, and 10 years from now, we're talking about the same 15 teams in the league.
That's huge. So, and that's kind of interesting. You talked about stability. Just a couple more questions. I'll let you out of here. You know, with what's going on in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Eagles, the Philadelphia Soul, the Philadelphia now Yellow Jackets. I mean, you're talking about maybe a watered down area. What was the selling pitch to finalize that? Because looking in the indoor, you know, leagues and looking at things like that, you go, wow, that could be a recipe for disaster for the Yellow Jackets.
It could be, but Joe Krause is a great marketer, and then with his ties to the Soul. Last night at the presser, there were city council members there who were just praising with open arms, wanting this other opportunity. And obviously, it'll come down to scheduling, too, to make sure we're not scheduling on the same weekends and things like that. I think Philadelphia is going to be great with their marketing. Joe Krause owns a marketing company, so, they're 100% sure of what they're doing.
And as a league, it's got to be something that it was a concern. So I guess one of the other questions that I have for you, you've got a couple of leagues that you're dealing with, the XL, the Extreme Football League, and the PIFL. I mean, so when someone's making a pitch in reality, what is the pitch? What usually makes it the final decision for a team to say yes to the AIF compared to X League or the PIFL?
It comes down to our budget. We are very confident in the budget we've built over the years. Our dues are fairly low compared to everybody else. We try to keep everybody as regionalized as possible to keep their overnight trips down and their trip mileage down in general. And the executive committees that we have and things like that, because we really want to be an owner's league. It doesn't, I don't want to be a John Morris league. I don't want to be a Larry Clark league. It all comes down to the owners feeling that they have a vested and a word in what goes on with the league. And that's our biggest pitch. And the stability of the league. I mean, we've had growing pains over the years. At one time, the AIFA was one of the biggest leagues in the country. We kind of went through a downturn. Now we're kind of back up in the upturn. But we are the longest running consecutive league at 10 years. This is going into our 10th year this year.
looking at your league then? You made the biggest one. Let's be honest. I mean, I'm a guy that I'm with the Texas Revolution. I watch it. Really, when you take a look at a league and you take a look at a team, it really does boil down to money. So when I look at maybe a team that might be joining the AIF, you know, and the main reason or the main structure being because that it was easier to get in because of the price and easier, does that open the door for teams that really shouldn't be eligible at all to really be playing in the league? And then you end up with the Atlanta Cleveland situation, you know, as far as what you had to deal with last year.
No, absolutely not. We're not going to use that anymore as for anything. I'm going through a completely different vetting process this year of what we went over. We've learned, had growing pains, John and I, for the last couple of years. I've been with him. This is going into my third year with him. So we've learned how to work off of each other and the vetting process. We can't keep getting a black eye, you know, like we had last year. So.
Yeah,
you know, it's all about moving forward, and we want to be spoken in the same breath as the PIFL, IFL, and CIF. You know, we want to be the Big Four, and I think that's kind of where indoor's heading to. In general, I think indoor needs to be more regionalized, and just it will help everybody across the board.
You got it. And I guess maybe I look at it and say, you know, obviously there's league fees that are being paid and everything. And this is, I'm going into probably some bylaw rules that you might not be able to tell me, but I'm going to ask it anyway. The worst thing you'll say, well, Sonny, we can't get into that. But if you've got a team that's going in and paying, you know, a lower price, are you actually making them pay more? Kind of like a deposit in case something happens in reality. Like if, you know, I don't know what the league fees are, but multiply it by two, and if they go and do the whole successful season, they'll get their money back, or they're already paid for next year or something like that. Is that something you can answer?
I really can't answer a lot to that. Our league dues, I can say, are year to year, but in the same breath, we do require letter of credits now. So that's one of the new things that I have instituted going in for this year.
I think that will help. That's a great idea. And obviously, I'm just your average, you know, indoor fan. I just happen to get lucky enough to call football games for the Texas Revolution. But looking at it, and I think your idea is right, the Big Four. So I guess I'm going to ask the other question that everybody's going. How soon are we going to take maybe the egos of each one of these leagues, set them to the side, and let the AIF go up against the PIF and the IFL and the CIF? Do you ever foresee that ever happening? Do you have good conversations with other leagues to where maybe something like that could happen?
Yes, I mean, we have a great relationship with the PIFL. I mean, we actually did some fill-in games for them last year to help them out, which in the grand scheme of things is unheard of. I mean, because you're helping a competitor out, but we don't want to see any league fail. We don't want to see any league fail. It goes to putting the egos aside and everybody cutting up, you know. And I've talked about this with many other owners and league people, is getting to be a more regionalized. You have IFL that could be West Coast. The CIF is the Midwest swath. PIFL is the Southern swath, and we're more of an East Coast. So I think if everybody could put their egos aside and get to that, it'd just contribute greatly to the health of indoor football overall. Doesn't matter what league you're in, we're all in it for the same thing, for the health and the continuity of everything.
And I have a great big super league in reality. At the end of it, it's crown your champions and have the champions go head to head in other ones. I mean, granted, I'm a fan, and of course, I'm an indoor fan, and of course, I'd like to see something like that that helps, you know, bring more. And I've always been the guy that wants to try to bring a little bit more, you know, information to people about indoor football. Like I tell everybody else, I'm going to go to an indoor championship game before the Super Bowl. I'm just more comfortable in that situation, more so than in the crowd of 80,000. I can sit in a stadium with a max of 15,000 and be more comfortable and see a great game as well. So I guess the question is what do you think about the future of the IFL or the future of the indoor game in general. You're seeing a lot of things going on with the AFL, losing a couple of teams, possibility of losing two others. Is there any plans of maybe you sticking in and maybe, making some inquiries with some other teams from other leagues to, maybe drag them into maybe putting them on, on your rosters?
Yes, I mean, there's always that possibility if somebody would reach out. Obviously, I can't reach out to people unknowing on what their contract situation is, but I definitely listen to everybody. And again, it goes back to being more regionalized. You have other leagues that their budget is just out of control. If you have to fly every week, that doesn't do you any good. But if you can take a four-hour bus trip to a game, Your costs are, less than a third of what it'd be otherwise. So, again, that's what it all boils down to is budget, travel, and that just would contribute greatly to the health. And some of these teams that are folding are going by the wayside. I would hope that they would reach out and look at the economic landscape and look for more regionalized territory that fits their budget and they're not losing $1 million, $2 million a year. So it goes from a hobby to an actual business.
Got it. Exactly. What's more coming up? You got any other announcements heading your way? Any other teams? We talk about approvals. We talk about expansions. And Muskegon, Atlanta, Winston-Salem, Philadelphia. Anything else? Any other rumors I heard? How about Erie? Some teams in Ohio, are you reaching out to them or are they reaching out to you to maybe – join your league?
Well, that's some things that I really can't speak to at this moment, but I will say that we will in the next week or so have at least two more big announcements coming down the pipe.
Wow, sounds wonderful. So by the end of next week, how many teams are you actually going to be in the league, actually slated for 2016 after you make those two announcements?
Well, like I said, I want to cap at 15. That's going to be a cap, and I do want to run the three divisions, a North, a Mid-Atlantic, and a South. That's the ultimate goal.
Got it.
And I think that would just keep everybody's travel down, keep everybody regionalized, and just be great for the health of the league and the health of the teams.
As of right now, what's the playoff looking at? You've got three divisions. It sounds like you're trying to shoot for it. You're going to kind of have like division champions and maybe one wild card to get the opportunity to play another team?
Yep, that's kind of what we're looking at. We have our owners meeting coming up September 12th in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. We're one of the ones to have it the earliest this year. I've never had one this early, but that's one of the things we'll vote on. And that's kind of what the consensus of everybody is. At this point, as the three division champions of the top wild card, and then we go a 1-4-2-3 format.
Got it. So you're not thinking about doing the bye, getting the top two teams, and then having two wild cards, or is that part of this more of the discussion, or are you really kind of looking at the other one we were just talking about?
Yeah, that's the top consensus one, but obviously anybody can, when we go to the owners meeting, they can put on the floor what they feel would be a good playoff scenario too. So then I'm sure we'll have a couple different scenarios when we get to our owners meetings and then vote on one and then that's how it'll be. Again, like I said, we want to be an owners league, so I want the owners to be comfortable as of what they're going to do as far as playoffs.
What are some of the other things that are going to be on that, agenda? Or are you allowed to comment on about some of the things you're going to talk about for 2016?
Sure. A couple of things we're going to look at. I put out a press release about it. A few things we're going to talk about are we're going to look at the chop block situation. Some of that gets out of hand, and you hate to see somebody go high or low and a player get injured. So we're going to look at the chop block rule. We're going to look at a challenge system, so that's something we have to talk to with the competition committee on how we can make a challenge system work if we have the feasibility with the filming at the arenas or just a huddle situation with the umpires, and I think that's a little unique to indoor football as well. But those are the two major topics other than the playoffs, and then we have the internal operations manual items we'll be talking about as well.
How do issues get on the, you know, the agenda to talk about at the, you know, owners meeting? Does someone actually have to submit it to somebody? How's that work?
What we do is when we announce what they see owners meetings are, we put it in an email. All the team owners and general managers can submit items that they do want to be heard at the owners meeting. So then I can actually budget time for that in the agenda for the meetings. Because we like, you know, sometimes it gets out of hand when everybody wants to just throw everything out. So I try to keep it more organized and have everybody submitted in advance. And that's not saying we won't listen to an idea that comes up, because somebody might have a better way to you know, do things than what we've talked about. But that way it keeps everything more on a timely fashion, and we have more time to spend with our vendors and sponsors at the meeting as well.
He's Larry Clark. He is a guy that just runs everything as over there in the AIF. And here's one thing I'll put out to you. You didn't turn away from the questions. I was going to ask some hard questions and try to, you know, figure out what was going on. I'm glad you were able to you know, spend some time with us, answer the questions, and some of the questions that other people wanting to know, and how that, you know, how that whole situation from last year was. And I appreciate your honesty and in working with us and being able to give us some, you know, good insight on what's happening in the AIF, because let's be honest, you know, looking into the next part of the season that was coming on, I was a little bit shaky. Getting a little bit more talk, I got a little more hope for you and what you got going on as far as the AIF. Oh, the other question I had, just really quick. I want to see your games. I mean, what are you guys going to – are you guys going to get on streaming? Is that going to be something – I mean, I'm sure the director of operations of the AIF probably has his hands all wet. Hey, remember, someone sent you a document about that, you know, back in the
day. Yes. Yes, and you know what? That person sent me the document. I would sure like to get it back because I had some computer issues. But I'm also in talks with another company that reached out to us. But yeah, whoever, the anonymous person who sent me the document, if I could get that resent, I would greatly appreciate it.
I'll see if I can get a hold of them and go from there. So we'll do that. Okay. So good stuff. Good stuff. Larry Clark, Director of Operations of the AIF. Thanks for some time. Good 30 minutes. I appreciate it. And good luck to you going into the 2016 season.
All right, Sonny. Thank you very much. I appreciate everything, sir.
You bet. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.